You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
On the line, joining us from Tamaki Makaurau, they recently accompanied the Ototahi Christchurch-based indie rock band There's a Tuesday on their 10-day residency over to South Korea, which is really, really awesome. The exchange, the residency, was facilitated by the Asia New Zealand Cultural Foundation, which is fantastic. And I really want to talk about a whole lot of stuff, ranging from how Aotearoa sees itself in the global landscape to how music functions over in South Korea, with our next guest, Samantha Cheung, who is a music journalist who accompanied There's a Tuesday. Good morning to you, Samantha. How are things up in Tamaki Makaurau?
Morena, Zach. Thank you for having me. How are things in Tamaki? They're going really well, I think. Lots of things are going on, amazing music things going on. I went to a gig yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and then on this Saturday we've got like a hikoi for pro-Palestine along the Harbour Bridge. That's going to be pretty big, so a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty busy day, a pretty busy recent past.
Yeah.
Nice, that's awesome. Now, you spent a few days in South Korea with the band. How much downtime did you get in South Korea? And if so, if you got any, what did you get up to while you were there?
Actually, we had quite a bit of downtime. Almost, we had maybe 2 free days in between that whole 10-day stretch. I would say we got up to like K barbecue business,
mm-hmm.
incredible meats, walking around like Gyeongbokgung Palace, which is quite a beautiful place to wear the cultural clothes like hanbok,
mm-hmm.
but it was very hot. So, and also just exploring the streets and the bars. For example, there was a bar with a baseball bat sized pint. They love baseball over there. I think we all went back there at least 3 times.
Mm-hmm. Owner, is that a product of kind of being occupied by the US subliminally for the last 70
I'm
years?
Sure.
Oh, that's so surreal. That's so surreal. Now, I want to kind of pose a bit of a tricky question, but so many New Zealand bands, when they tour overseas, they go to the US, UK, or the EU, especially the Pākehā bands, and they ignore how Asia is right there in their own backyard. Do you think that if New Zealanders saw themselves in a global sense, that they share a neighbourhood with Asia and not the US, UK, or EU, that they'd be more likely to tour in that part of the world?
I definitely think that's the case. We are Asia Pacifica or Oceania. It's great to invest in the Europe or US space, but what I think is really awesome about Asia in general is actually how they love high fidelity music and merch and collecting physical copies of music and showing up, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If we kind of saw that they are our neighbors, it would be easier for us to actually build more of those connections. One of the big tips I got for the band was to make like a lyric video in different Asian languages. And that doesn't mean you have to re-record something, but it's as simple as that to make the audience over in Asia feel more included.
Mm.
So it's like, I would say it's very simple things that you could do to not only see yourself as like Pākehā or just from New Zealand, for example, not only seeing yourself as, oh, they're like far away from us and we don't speak the same languages. It's better for us to actually see they want to speak our language or they want to know our songs.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a ripe, especially with the young generations, there's a ripe fandom for K-pop in general among our young people. So there's already kind of cross-cultural pollination happening already.
That's so true, yeah. You know. K-pop Demon Hunters and
mm-hmm.
even just like
anime.
Yes, yeah.
Anime is a huge cultural export over here. People love it. I can't get enough. Yeah.
I would say don't discount Asia. Asian fans are actually probably the most passionate fans in terms of what musicians want fans to do.
Mm.
Buy things, go to the gigs, listen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also, what else? No, I think we've covered that. To be the person covering There's a Tuesday in South Korea, you had to apply to be in that journalistic role. I imagine it was stiff competition. Why do you think you got chosen to do that?
That's a good question. It's quite an interesting thing where for such a grant that's never happened before, so many of my peers that I know personally also applied, and it's tricky to to have to tell them, I guess. And then, but they were so supportive, and we all support each other even before knowing who got the role.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel very grateful to have the role and travel for the first time. I think why I got the role was to do with my, I'm also a freelance publicist, and before my application, I tried to show that I can reach out to many places and spread this coverage on the specific project.
Mm-hmm.
And the awesome thing too, as well, is that I've written about There's a Tuesday maybe a few years ago, even when they were, even when they were quite small for Girl at Night, which is one of their singles.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I had a slight professional connection with them as well, and I tried to reach out to as many places as I could to see that, to prove that there is going to be some interest already.
Mm-hmm. And you're also just a real MFNG. That's also why you got the role. I mean, looking at your LinkedIn and just the different publications you've wrote for, it's pretty impressive. So definitely wear that as a badge of honor. It's awesome. Now, it's funny watching your documentary that you made about the trip. Traveling by air as a musician seems pretty painstaking. Was the travel admin relatively chill? Was it okay?
I would say it was very chill.
That's good.
It's just that for me and maybe some of the band, that was like the longest flight we've ever had.
Really?
But for me, maybe I usually go to Malaysia, which is maybe 11 hours, but this was 12 and a bit.
Ah!
It just felt very long. But Korean Air, the airline where we flew with, was the best one I've ever flown with.
Better than the ANZ.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, it's just very comfortable and clean.
Mm.
And then the food is the best airplane food I've ever had. I had this, like, salmon bibimbap, which is like a smoked salmon on rice kind of that vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just, I feel like it was more spacious than other international airlines.
True. That's awesome. Okay, well, maybe if I ever go to Korea, I'll have to take that airline. I can't imagine, you know, in New Zealand, food is all right. It's usually very, like, roast lamb with peas and gravy. Like, you know, it's not the most creative stuff. But, yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a really fun time.
It was very funny that we were given a very long-looking sausage roll, but it's actually like a mince and cheese pie on Korean airline.
Really?
Like, this feels like home.
That's so cute. And to document their 10-day residency, you've written a couple of articles, one for the Asia New Zealand Foundation and one for the Korea Times. You've also got a cheeky documentary that's waiting to be released. Obviously, the experience was geared towards affording There's a Tuesday a bunch of industry experience. But I want to know, what lessons has this experience afforded you as a music journalist? And what have you learned about the music journalism industry broadly, now that you've had an international perspective?
Amazing question. I personally don't do my own filming very much. So me choosing to do a documentary as well as some writing has been an incredible, like, journey for me to put together something and edit it. So all this whole 10-day thing into like 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm.
What I've learned more broadly for music journalism is that people do care about music journalism, but they might not think of it as music journalism. For example, even just this morning, I looked up and I saw Hugh Jackman's doing a new Neil Young movie.
Is he playing Neil Young?
I think he is.
What?
But, you know, there's definitely been, like, Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan. That's now pop culture, and people have shown there's a market for at least, you know, movie music journalism or media, I should say.
Neil Diamond. Was it Neil Diamond?
Oh, maybe it's Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond. I was going to say Neil Young. I don't think we'd be very on board for that. But yeah, no, there totally is an appetite for it. Completely agree.
Yeah, there is an appetite for it, I would say, is what I learned. And that people in day-to-day life do engage with music journalism in just, like, very small things. For example, why is Lorde's album Virgin called? Why is that called Virgin?
Mm.
So many people I know, like, looked that up. And they follow the people that they care about, or if there's, like, a very interesting twist or cause. Yeah, I hope that answers your question.
That does. That certainly does. Now, I've heard documentarians say that to get the most out of this subject, when it comes to, you know, covering them positively in a positive light, the best thing you can do is spend a lot of time and build a relationship with them. Is that what you did with There's a Tuesday?
Yeah, definitely. And because I wanted to know the band who were the most lovely people in the world. I know that might sound cliche, but it's actually true. Mm. what I wanted to get from our relationship was for them to feel really comfortable and also just safe to talk to me about anything. With, like, talk to me as in, like, oh, look, we found this today, or, I don't know, sharing a beer together or something.
Mm.
Yeah, it is important to create a safe environment as well as something that you can riff off of in person, because I'm also experiencing this trip myself, and if I was kind of just behind the camera and not talking to anyone, I feel like I wouldn't get the same experience of, like, what did this really feel like for all of us and the band?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. You have to be part of the package, because you are part of the package. You can't be like a fly on the wall, you know, in a way.
Yeah, I think so. That's how I feel about making a documentary. You're part of the world as well.
Exactly. It's your story to a degree, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when most people think of Korean music, they think of K-pop, but there's been a steady rock scene in South Korea since at least the mid-1950s, with people like Shin Jung-hyun, the godfather of Korean rock, making some incredible work. The band, There's a Tuesday, got to hang with rockers like Kim Sung-ju. You all attended the Pinterport Rock Fest, and they played at the CJ Cultural Foundation show. How does the rocky stuff over there compare to what we've got going on over here?
Wow, it's pretty crazy that, so the Pinterport Rock Festival is a three-day festival where about 150,000 people spread across, or most of the days, are at.
Mm-hmm.
What that showed me was that people really care about rock music, and when I was watching who actually goes there, what demographics, it was maybe from, like, young to 35 or 40, and I was quite surprised by that. I guess when you think about rock, maybe in a Western context, it's more about hard or classic rock, and you've got maybe like 40-plus-year-old, maybe mostly men, for example, but I just felt like it was such a huge variety of men and women going over to watch a whole huge rock festival in a 40-degree heat wave,
with
the worst heat wave that South Korea had seen, or Seoul, sorry.
That's intense. That I can't imagine that'd be very... I mean, that'd be fun to go see that rock fest, but not in 40-degree heat. That's terrifying.
It was actually... There are, like, some huge cooling rooms, so it's, like, looks like a big warehouse, but it's all air-conditioned, so that saves your life, really.
Man.
But what I got from that festival was that, yes, rock music, even if it's not just Korean rock music, is really cherished over there. For example, Nat from the band... She noticed that the merch line was 4 hours long. She was in it. And also, compared to the beer line or liquor line, it's 4 minutes long.
Mm.
That was so incredible to see and hear. And in terms of the Korean indie rock scene, that's where we were. We were based in Hongdae, which is a suburb where indie rock, K-indie rock, is started emerging, but together with K-pop about 30 years ago.
True.
Yeah.
True. That's awesome. Does it draw from similar influences over in the States?
You know what's really funny is when I was doing a bit more research during the trip as well, the story is that 1 year after Kurt Cobain died, hundreds potentially, converged to commemorate him 1 year after his death. And those people 30 years ago have now become the K-indie people or bands that you see today.
True.
Or recently, yeah.
True, that's awesome. That's great.
I think that's like the spirit of Kurt Cobain, is to keep independence alive. And maybe it's like slightly anarchist, but it's just people really valuing arts and subculture.
Mm. Art for art's sake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great old phrase. I think that's on the MGM Lion intro, you know, the film studio MGM.
Oh, yes.
I think, but I'm not too sure. You said that this experience really changed how the band sees the industry and themselves. You wrote, "What works at home doesn't automatically translate abroad. Success in Asia demands flexibility, learning the local landscape, adapting strategies, and recognizing that global influence doesn't always mean global dominance. With this in mind, how do artists trying to make it big in Korea do so in ways that are different from how they do here?"
Yes. The awesome thing about our trip or residency is that we had some label tours, for example, to Mound Media, which is a huge UK indie huge media company and labels that are inside that company. The biggest thing that I remember taking away from these tours and meetings were how visual Asia, the Asian media music market is. So for example, YouTube Music and Melon, which is another streaming service, is bigger than Spotify and Apple over there.
That's so nuts.
I know it. Yeah. That means that you should, if you're going to try and break into that market, you should try and create many short reels, but actually showing people what you can do live, especially. And also even holding more Q&As, live streams and things like that.
So a more fan interaction.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. The very interesting thing was even more popular than I've ever thought of as the Gorillaz being like, I guess, a concept, you know, the band Gorillaz. Mm-hmm. There's even like a virtual YouTuber floor. So there's a producer behind the scenes, but they have an actual virtual avatar that conducts live streams and Q&As. That just showed me that there's people, there are fans out there who just want to connect, even if it's not with the real thing or the real person. Visually, I guess. They just want to connect with the artist or the producer.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Oh my gosh.
And also, the producers are given the same respect.
Mm.
Oh, sorry to interrupt.
Does South Korea have a more well-rounded music infrastructure? Like, is their equivalent of New Zealand on air more hands-on?
I would say they have a huge support from CJ Cultural Foundation, who hosted us in Seoul.
Mm.
You can think of them as, if you know, Big Fan or Crescendo Music, but a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like, for example, Big Fan that we have in Auckland is a multi-purpose music space. They've got venues and studios, and they do lots of workshops and residencies. That's this case for CJ Cultural Foundation. And as I was going up the stairs to their like office and studio, you could see a lot of the artists framed along the stairs that have actually won some awards since like working with CJ Cultural Foundation or them attending some workshops and things.
Whoa, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And last thing, sorry about that, would be CJ Cultural Foundation is part of a huge group called CJ Group, and that's worldwide. So they've got 100,000 global employees. And what I thought was really interesting is that they even invest in like film and entertainment. So Parasite, you know, by Bong Joon-ho, that awesome movie, that was, I think, funded by CJ Group. And also they helped BTS create a music video even before they were quite big. They've got this like kind of Times Square looking virtual set. It looks like Times Square basically, but you can film music videos there. So they have a huge infrastructure for not just mentoring musicians, but helping them on their visual journey as well as like investing in entertainment in general.
Mm. And now they're in Aotearoa. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's sick. That's awesome. Man, before we head off, I want to touch on one last thing. There's a Tuesday, and an artist, Kim Sung-ju, who is a South Korean guitarist, made a bilingual track together called Mean / Dieback. Despite the language barrier, the language of the music really united them, is what I gathered from your articles. What was it like sitting in on that session, and can we expect that song to drop anytime soon?
Yes, so I've heard from the band manager and the band that they are hoping, they're looking into how they can release that song. It was incredible, just about over a long afternoon, that the band sat together with Kim Sung-ju, who they saw perform at the Pentaport Rock Festival. What it was like inside was quite amazing, actually. I could see that they were swapping some slang and riffing off each other. The Mean / Taibak, I think that's what it's called, that kind of working title, was it came from them riffing off of like, what's good, you know, that's mean, or Taibak, that's really good. The interesting thing was watching people listen to each other maybe even more closely than usual. Someone might play a little instrument and then someone's like, oh, that's good, let's add this.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
so it was
more organic, I'd say.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. It seemed just like, you know, I think oftentimes we get very othered by certain cultures because of how they dress or eat or their language. But at the end of the day, you know, there's I think nearly all cultures throughout human history have worshipped the same star cluster, and that is Matariki, the Pleiades. Yes. You know, there's so many things that unite us, and I think those are the beautiful things that people need to spend more time thinking about, you know?
I agree, yeah. Have you been to Asia before that?
Never, and I really need to. I really want to. As cliche as it sounds, probably Japan, just because it's like, you know, it's I think next to America in terms of its cultural imperialism or cultural dominance. Like, it's nuts. I'm a sucker for a lot of Japanese cultural exports, and the food also looks incredible, and I have a friend there at the moment, so
I haven't been to Japan, but that's one of my top destinations as well. For the same reasons.
If you could go to anywhere in Asia right now, where would you go?
I'll go back to Seoul because there's so many things I want to go do again.
Yeah, now that you've got a foothold there, you want to really explore the place.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. So.
I'm not surprised. It's a gigantic place. It's nuts. A huge scale that we can't even really comprehend here in New Zealand. Anyway, thank you for coming on the program this morning, Samantha. I really appreciate your time. Do you have any final words for our lovely listeners out there?
I want to thank the listeners for listening, Radio 1, and Zach for having me. I want just like everyone to have a think about if you think K-pop and Korean culture could be part of your everyday life more. You could just look something up online and get into it.
And listen
to There's a Tuesday.
Yes, that completely. I would definitely suggest, if you aren't a huge fan of the sort of K-pop stylings, check out some of the older Korean rock from the 50s, 60s and 70s. It's pretty nuts. We're going to play some after we play This Is Tuesday. But anyway, thank you for coming on, Samantha. Really appreciate it. And hope you have a great time up in Tamaki Makaurau.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, folks, that was Samantha Chung. We're talking to her about her time in South Korea with This Is Tuesday. Sounds awesome. We're going to play This Is Tuesday. Their song Billy is going to come up next, and then we're going to have Shin Jung-kyun with Beautiful Mountains and Rivers. It is 10:37 here on The One. Kia ora.
Billy Bud, nice view. A place to write something to. An old love who stung her in the city fuzz. Forever ago.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.